Welcome to Rockin' the Music World. I'm Robert Lloyd.
Get on the left, get on the right. Turn on the radio and join in the fight. Sort out the lies, seek out the truth. On the radio, they're giving the proof. You're gonna love it, hate it, it can confuse. First time you try it, it can give you the blues. But take my word, you can call and abuse. Just keep on talking news.
Okay, here we go for another show. We've got a big one today, a real important one, especially in the White Network. We're going to be talking country music, white man's soul music. This is Robert Lloyd, and I'm so happy that you're all listening in and love music. And this is a network of culture, a beautiful culture of our people, a Northern European ancestry, and we're just so proud to be here and to give you the best of what we are, and to show the world that we have something that's so unique and so precious that the world can't live without it. And we certainly want to promote this and promote it to the world, and especially promote it to our own people, our own children, and the ancestry that will live on and bring the world the beauty that the white culture brings to the world. Cowboy, we're going to be talking country music, as I stated. Country music is referred to affectionately as white man's soul music. And we have a soul beyond any other race in the world. And we're a hypersensitive people. We don't like to make a lot of noise at times because we're very sensitive, and we're sensitive to that. So we talk politely to others. We have beautiful music that's not offensive, and we let the other races do the offenses, and we defend what is beautiful. I'm going to give you the history of country music, because it's so important. Country music started in the United States. It's an American art form of the best kind. Famous around the world. We're known as country music. And I had a wonderful week this week. I live in South Florida, and we've had beautiful rain that's just keeping everything so nice and green. I want to discuss country music today and its history and where it came from, why it came about. And I'm going to have some of the classic country music songs, the great hits of different eras, because we're going to be talking of early country, middle time country, then we're going to go into pop country, outlaw country, and then the traditionalist movement coming back in the 90s into today's pop, which is it country or not, and who are these people? I hope you liked last week's show about the music industry. It was from my heart. It was something that absolutely had to be said. If you haven't listened to it yet and you love music, you need to listen in to the one that's the second week here. It's called The Music Industry. It tells who owns the music industry. There are a few people that own the music business throughout the whole world. It's very important for everyone to understand that. It's important that our people understand, even the Christian record labels. Folks, they're not owned by Christians. They were bought out in the 90s for the most part, and to this day, the big contemporary Christian record labels are non-Christian owned. They're virtually Jewish owned. Now, Jews don't believe in Jesus, and yet we're the contemporary Christian music scene. Now, how do you explain that? It's a very, very sad time. Let's go now, this week, instead of just the music scene in general, we're going to talk country music. And as I stated last week, we even had a segment on country music. And what's so important is, while I'm talking here today, it is very important that you understand that country music is just like the Christian contemporary music scene. They're both located in Nashville, by the way, and they're not owned by Christians. Once again, it's a Jewish business, and the country music record labels report to their gods in New York City, and their gods with a little g, and they don't have the values that we have. They don't look at people the way we look at people. They look at people as cattle. They call us goyim. We're cattle. We're just a workforce for them, and they own our music, and they decide who is going to get signed to the music labels. And if that isn't huge, some of the greatest musicians walking this earth right now, ladies and gentlemen, some of the greatest musicians don't have a chance in the music industry. They're not homosexuals, or they're not immoral. At least they don't promote their immorality. We're all immoral. We all have sin. Whether you're Christian or not, there's right and wrong. It's easier to see as a Christian, but nevertheless, well, I have a lot of listeners that aren't Christians, and I respect that. But understand, the people that own these record labels are not only non-Christians, they're antichrist. They are against everything that we believe in, and they don't respect what we have, and they will do their best to destroy us, and they're doing that right now. A little tidbit of information, if you don't understand this and it's brand new to you. I was born in 1952. I'm 60 years old. In 1952, white people made up 20% of the world's population. We've never been a majority. 20% of the world's population. In 2002, 50 years later, we are only 8% of the population. Now, it's getting worse and worse. Now, in the last, 12 years, we added another billion people. And if you look at the figures, the white populations are going down, and the other populations are growing. So the blacks and Hispanics, the Chinese. Now the Chinese, that doesn't bother me. They are with Chinese. That's their business. They're hardworking people and industrious and stuff. But of the billion people that are now extra on this earth in the last 12 or 13 years, they're not white. And if you think this world is going to last without white people, without the culture of the whites, the upper European ancestry, if you think it's going to go very long in a tribalism state, think again. Any whites that will remain will be hunted down, but it will be only a matter of time till they're bred out of existence. And it's happening right now. It's happening in Sweden. It's happening in England. It's happening in Germany. It's happening in Italy. It's happening in the United States and Canada. It's happening everywhere, ladies and gentlemen. So now I want to take one of our forms of music that was brought to you by white people from in the deep south of the United States. But it isn't only the Deep South of the United States, because country music is everywhere. God Bless the USA. That's done by, I think he was a Connecticut Yankee, in fact, that sang that song. I can't remember who wrote it. I apologize for that. We have Western music, the cowboys, and this is where we get country and Western. And of course, now it's gone back to basically country music, but, the Yankees saw in the Appalachians, these fiddlers and guitar players, and now the talk like this, and, And it was foreign to them, and they didn't have a lot of money, because ever since the war between the states, our economies were destroyed, and we're still suffering the effects of that outside of, now with the air conditioner, we got mass movement of Yankees coming down here, and it's becoming a mix, and there's a lot of problems with that. But anyway, you had hillbilly music in the 1920s, and it's very interesting that, as a hillbilly music, people really liked it, but it still is just going to be a certain group of people that's going to respond to it. Eventually, it became known as country. They stopped the slang. I mean, just because a gentleman has a twang when he talks, I mean, I have friends of mine in South Carolina and Georgia and Alabama, and I don't hear as much hillbilly slang as much as I listen to the absolute class of the Southern drawl. Just classy, educated people, and they are the ancestry and the people of the South. I'm one of the people that I have ancestry going back into the South a long ways, even though I grew up in the Midwest. And I respect that ancestry. So we're going to be talking about something that came out from my people, and country and country western. About from the 1920s, it was hillbilly. They had the Carter family and stuff. And all of a sudden, in the 40s, it got really popular, and people started referring to it as country. And then when the cowboy music came in, they had western, and they would play the same venues like in Texas. A lot of the cowboys would be playing, and then you would have your country people playing, and very similar music, very easily through osmosis. They'd all be playing their own songs and stuff. And then during the Second World War, when people drafted and joined up in the armies, you had this proliferation of country tunes. The guys would take their guitars and have it there with them, and people would be listening to them sing, and a lot of people really became country fans at that time. So it's become quite a thing. As of 2009, there was a survey made, and the most listened to genre in the evening commute is country music, and in the morning, it's the second most listened to genre of all music. When you're going to work, it's a music that's based on melody, and that's where you have the Nashville Songwriters Association and all the 1,352 guitar pickers in Nashville. Well, talking about those pickers, you have how many tens of thousands of songwriters that are in Nashville and the surrounding communities in Franklin and places like that, driving taxi cabs, got a shovel in their hand, selling used cars, whatever they're doing. They do whatever they can do to keep in the genre of songwriting. And I'm going to have a songwriting show also. I'm a songwriter myself, as many as you know. I can usually sing as good as the artists themselves, but I love the songwriting. And when the country music started, it was the Irish fiddle. So the Irish were really important part of this. The Germans came in with the dulcimer. Remember the dulcimer and that Italian mandolin. And you have the Spanish guitar, the acoustic guitar. And then one of these liberal historians said, well, yeah, and the West African banjo. Yeah, right. And so I read his factual account of the African banjo. Ladies and gentlemen, just know the Africans didn't have anything to do with country music. It's as far removed from what they understand as anything in the world. And you have the occasional black artist once every 30 years or so. Charlie Pride was black. But I would really doubt if he listens to country music per se, except for the fact that's how he made his living. But anyway, they say down here in some of my notes, country music is often erroneously thought of as solely the creation of European Americans. Well, it was, folks. It's white soul music. You know, I even read one time they were arguing over who actually wrote the most famous, well-known song in the whole world and all of history. You know what it was? Dixie. Oh, I wish I was in the land of cotton. And some historians will try to say that was written by a black man. And, you know, there's just nothing that white people have ever invented. I mean, there's just nothing according to these liberals. They're sick people. And, we just want to be left alone. We in the white nationalist movement, we just want to be with our people and be left alone. And they can go say they invented everything. I mean, you know, blacks, you know, what have they ever invented? You know, someone tries to think that, peanut butter. No, they didn't. They didn't even bring up peanut butter. I mean, white people invent everything. I mean, you put a couple of white guys on a corner somewhere looking at an empty lot, and they build something. We're the most fantastic group of people that's ever been on this world, and we have so much to protect that our people need to be guarded. And this music is one of them. It's now being propagated by people that have been approved by the Jews that own the record labels. So what type of person do you think we're getting as our country stars? We have one country star. Absolutely, one of the new ones. That's Scotty McCrary. Of the Carolinas. His mom and dad live up in North Carolina. They're real estate people. And Scotty won American Idol. And I believe he was the most popular American Idol contestant ever in its all history. And he's going to be a superstar if he can just pick the right songs. It's very important to write a song. Remember Conway Twitty says it all starts with a song. You got to pick the right songs. I even sent him a CD to his mom and dad's house when he was about ready to win, just shortly thereafter, because he was still 17 years old, 16 or 17 years old. And I didn't want to send it to him directly. I want to send it to his mom and dad. Rightfully so, they're Christian people, and it's something that I needed to send to them. That I wanted them to listen to the songs and see if they could then forward them to Scotty or present those and see if he would like it. Never got anything back and nothing ever came up from it, but I know I had some hits there for him, but I'll hopefully run into him one of these days. But anyway, as country music goes, early on it was Jimmy Rogers. Remember Jimmy Rogers? Not the guy in the 50s, but back in the 20s and 30s, and the Carter family. You know, that's where Johnny Cash's wife came out of. He just loved the Carters. and their daughters were cute little things. It was interesting. I believe as the Carter family was, they say they were captured at a historic recording session in Bristol, Tennessee, on August 1st, 1927. There was a guy named Ralph Peer, and he was a talent scout, and he was a sound recordist. They didn't call him an engineer or a producer, just a recordist. And there's a scene in the movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And do you all remember seeing that? It's when I let my sorrow, a man of constant sorrow. And that's such a special scene in movie history.
Place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised.
George Clooney was in that, and he had this beard, and he sang in harmony with two other guys and a guitar player. They actually had a black guitar player in there, and it was such a scene. And the guy that was recording it was so funny. That's the one thing George Clooney has done that I really did like. The scene was fantastic. That was back in 1927. I think June Carter Cash was pretty young at that time. So I don't know if June was in it. It would have been her mom and dad probably, and aunts and uncles. And then they had the Ryman Auditorium, if y'all remember that, and you people that love country and been up into Nashville, the Ryman Auditorium was a church, and it was they had great gospel singing and everything, and there's a lot of history on it. One of these days I'll probably do a history of the Ryman Auditorium show, and it's very, very interesting. I've been there. And it was sits about 2,500 people, has a balcony. It reminds me of one of the churches I used to go to. Almost, it was a new church, but it actually reminded me of the Ryman Auditorium in size, about 2,500 people, had balconies, had two level, and had a great stage. And then the famous radio station WSM AM in Nashville. To the present day, I mean, they're the ones that broadcast the country music everywhere. And at night, it would bounce off the atmosphere, and people from everywhere in the United States at a given time could run into WSM AM in Nashville. Some of the early stars on the Opry show, it was called the Grand Old Opry. It went right into the Ryman Auditorium. Where one of them was Uncle Dave Macon in the notes I came up with, and I don't know Uncle Dave Macon, but another one was Roy Acuff, of course. The WSM was a 50,000-watt signal in 1934, which is attributed to why it was heard for so far away. And Roy Acuff, if you remember, did the Wabash Cannonball. Out from the wide Pacific to the broad Atlantic shore, she climbs up a flowery mountain over the hills and by the shore. Although she's tall and handsome and she's known quite well by all, she's a regular combination of the Wabash Cannonball. Remember that? That was a Roy Acuff's biggie, and it's been done in many different versions since then. Anyway, going into the 1930s and 40s, the cowboy songs came up and Western music, and so then they combined them. They were getting popular in Hollywood, and some of the stars of that time were, of course, Gene Autry, that owns the Angels out there, the Sons of the Pioneers, and Roy Rogers. Happy trails to you. And country and music were frequently played together on the same stations, so hence the term country western music. When I grew up, we called it country western music. Probably about in the 80s, it started to be called country. And this is kind of interesting. And remember, country music started in the Ryman Auditorium, which was a church. And a beautiful place it is. But remember, I mentioned this last week in the music industry and in the contemporary music field, the old timers in the churches, the old Baptist people that I come out of, they don't like drums. Well, what they did in early country music, then they kind of kept away from drums too, but musicians being musicians, they just said it was too loud and the singing cowboys couldn't have drums following them on the wagon train. They took up too much space and it wasn't pure. But by 1935, Western Swing with Bob Wills added drums to his Texas Playboys. And then in the 1940s, the Grand Ole Opry did not want the Playboys drummer to appear on stage. So it was always a point of contention. And although drums were used by the rockabilly groups in the 50s, which came out of country music, the less than conservative Grand Ole Opry, Louisiana Hayride, kept its infrequently used drummers backstage as late as 1956. They'd be playing along with the group, but you wouldn't see them. They'd be behind a curtain, just not to alienate people that thought they were from the devil. But, you know, and we have some great country drummers, just like we have some of the great contemporary Christian drummers, and they're not from the devil. They're great Christians, and they've added so much to our music, and we're proud of them. Anyway, by the early 60s, it was rare that a country band didn't even have a drummer. It was accepted, and of course it's different compared to rock drumming. It's more part of the soundtrack. And you know, I knew a country band back in the Midwest. They were friends of mine, and they weren't competing with us. We played in different venues and stuff, but they were strictly a country band, and they didn't have a drummer. But I always thought it was more a matter of economy. They only made so much money per night and didn't feel another drummer was worth it. So they didn't have a drummer. They were a good band. They had bass, rhythm guitar, and electric guitar. And they had one of the great singers. He was a guy from Montana. Man, he could sing. Frankie Lane had nothing on the guy. Anyway, then we come in the late 40s, early 50s. Mr. Hank Williams, the drunk. He was a wild man, talented. He was a songwriter. He was a singer that would never have made it today. You know, I got a feeling that I'm blue, lonesome. I mean, his style of singing would never have been accepted. He wasn't really that good of a singer, but he had charisma and stage presence. Louisiana Hayride was so tired of his antics. Sometimes he wouldn't show up. He was the first guy that started that stuff. And he'd be drunk out of his head. And they say, now, you're not going to play at the Louisiana Hayride anymore. Hank, we're firing you. And he says, well, he says, you can go ahead and fire me, but nobody's going to come to your concerts anymore. And he was about right, so they'd have to hire him back again and everything. But, you know, he knew that, you know, people just came to see him play. He was a wild guy. And it's just part of the history of country. We can run away from it and lower our eyes and everything, but that's just the way it is. We're people too. And we have our outrageous people, just like every group does. But when our people are outrageous, they come with a lot of talent, just like the Ludwig van Beethoven was outrageous, and him and Hank Williams probably would have been very interesting to be around each other. Very outrageous. That's the best term I can use. So anyway, then rockabilly comes in right after Hank Williams, around the middle 50s and 56. They called that the year of the rockabilly, 1956. It was a mixture of rock and roll and hillbilly music. And Elvis Presley was coming in big at the time, and he was both in rock and roll, and he was also in country. One of the few people that could do it, but you know, he had a man's voice, and so he could sing country, and he could sing anything, so he could do rock and roll also. We miss the guy. He brought so much talent. Will there ever be another individual? And to think that, you know, people like Michael Jackson are comparable to him and stuff, they say, well, you know, Michael Jackson with his immorality when he would dance and stuff. Oh, he gets that from Elvis Presley, from his hip thrust and everything. You can watch Elvis Presley on the old film, and he is a great dancer, but he was never immoral. That is garbage when you hear that. Elvis had his problems, and he had the gang around him, the mafia around him, that probably wasn't good. He got into drugs and drinking and everything. Yeah, he had all the women and stuff. Well, he's a very handsome guy. He's very popular, and people threw themselves on him. I mean, it was, you know, he was a young man. But to put him in the same category as some of these modern day Negroes and stuff, it's very, very tough for me to hear, and I don't want to hear it. It just wasn't. How big rockabilly got along with country was during this time that you'd have two, three, four songs that were Elvis Presley with Heartbreak Hotel, Johnny Cash, I Walk the Line.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring.
Carl Perkins, Blue Suede Shoes. I mean, all these guys were great country artists, even though Carl Perkins with his Blue Suede Shoes, with that song, was considered rock and roll. Carl Perkins was country. You know, the Beatles played a lot of his music, Beatles 65 album. They had Carl Perkins music. You know, the Beatles loved Carl Perkins when they were growing up. Johnny Cash dominated country music for the 1950s. At one time, was it him or was it Garth Brooks? I think at one time Garth Brooks was so big that I think Johnny Cash or Garth Brooks, correct me, I'll have to get this correct. I shouldn't be saying it if I'm not sure, but it's one of these two were selling 90% of all the albums coming out of Nashville in a single year. Now, that's how big some of the individual artists can be. I would imagine that was probably Johnny Cash. Garth was huge and still could be if he wanted to be. And he was selling a lot of CDs, but I don't think 90% would be fair because there's also a lot of, you know, George Strait was going at the same time, and he wasn't selling 9 albums to George's 1. I mean, you know, that doesn't make sense. So it had to be by default. It had to be Johnny was selling 90% of the albums out of Nashville in the 50s. And then it reached its peak probably in the early 60s with that rockabilly. And then the Nashville sound then turned pretty much country music into this multi-million-dollar industry. And it was pretty much all centered in Nashville, which allowed for them to control it more. Now there's that issue again. That's not good. And then you had some great producer. You had a great musician named Chet Atkins, and Chet Atkins is not only a great musician, but he's a great producer, and he's produced many of the other great musicians and singers out of Nashville. He was also became one of the Nashville record label presidents. And there he is, Mr. Guitar was also a company president. He was that astute at things. And then you had my favorite producer, probably of all time, Mr. Owen Bradley. He did the soundtracks for Patsy Cline that were so beautiful. Crazy. With a gorgeous Floyd Kramer at the piano. His brother played bass, and boom, 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 boom. You know, it was just so gorgeous. And it was basically, okay, guys, one, two, three, boom. That's the way they did it back then. It wasn't layered like it is now. And that's the way I do recordings. I layer everything. You start with the drums and the bass and the rhythm guitar, and then you start layering everything in. And sometimes you take those things out that you initially layered, and you're putting in piano and strings and horns and what have you. But back then, it was one, two, three, boom. Everybody played together. They had to play it right. And you had some of the most gorgeous soundtracks of all time come out of that. And that was Mr. Owen Bradley. You also had Billy Sherrill. And they brought country music to a bigger audience. You know, if it was up to Patsy Cline. Now, I love Patsy Cline. She's one of my all-time favorite singers. But she had no class. You know, if you know her life story, she was an immoral girl. I mean, you wouldn't want your kids hanging around her. I mean, I'm sorry, she was a pig. And she didn't know how to keep, well, I'm not even going to say it. But she was a great singer. And she had poor taste in music. She liked the yodel. And if it was up to her, she'd just yodel every song, and that would have been her career. And Owen Bradley had a twister arm and just almost force her into the studio to sing some of these gorgeous songs by Harlan Howard and some of these guys. By the way, these guys I'm talking about, they're going to be another show. We're going to have some of the great songwriters of country and songwriters of rock and everything, but we're going to have some good shows coming up, folks. So anyway, the producers really pushed country music into another vein. And you know, some people weren't, you know, they were country purists and they didn't like the strings, like in Ray Price, "For the Good Times. Don't look so sad. I know it's over." Such a beautiful song written by Kris Kristofferson, by the way. That's one of the most beautiful recordings ever made. And I know a friend of mine, and I just met him the other day by phone. His name is Jim Ring, out of California, and he's an old strict country fan, and he didn't appreciate those strings coming in. And we're talking about that, and I was just smiling when I was talking to him. The advantage of a phone, but he liked the real, electric steel guitars and stuff, and I like that too. So, I mean, I just like a good variety of that stuff. And then with the strings, when they came in, it turned into what they called countrypolitan, as cosmopolitan. And if you've ever been in Nashville, it's considered a small cosmopolitan city. It's full of art. And you can have all types of music there. You can go out to dinner at night and have great music while you're having your dinner. It's a neat place to, I mean, if you could live somewhere, Nashville would be a wonderful place. If you just like good entertainment and good singing music, Nashville, it's New York without being New York, if you know what I mean. And so, when Cosmopolitan came in, of course, it was in Patsy Cline because of Owen Bradley. Jim Reeves, "Put your sweet lips a little closer to the phone." And then you had Skeeter Davis, the Browns, "Boom, boom, boom, boom. All the chapel bells were ringing." And then Eddie Arnold, "Man, the Cattle Call," and "Make the World Go Away." And then with that came Floyd Kramer, the guy that did all the beautiful songs. He played on Patsy Cline's, and that's called a slip finger. The Last Date, or is it The Last Dance? I can't remember the name of it. Dun 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 dun. Boom 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 boom. That's Floyd Kramer. That's called a slip finger, because you have to kind of slip your finger off the black key onto the white key real quick when you're opening up a note when you're playing. And he was the one that came up with this. And if you're a keyboard player, get some Floyd Kramer stuff and learn that and carry that tradition on, because it's the most beautiful thing. Then we're going into the 60s with this stuff now. With the Cosmopolitans, and then you also had the influx of a real neat sound, the Bakersfield sound out of Bakersfield, California. It was they're northwest of Los Angeles, quite a ways back in the country area, and it was hardcore honky tonk with some western swing in it. Buck Owens. I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see.
I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale. Looks like I've got a tiger by the tail.
You know, I mean, his stuff was so neat, and he had that guy in his band that had that real high voice that could hit those harmonies on top of him, and it is forever a part of country music. It's the most beautiful harmony you would ever want to know. Merle Haggard is part of the Bakersfield sound. He comes out of there. They were influenced by West Coast residents such as Bob Wills and Lefty Frizzell, and they came to rely on this, and they of course were amplified. Everything was electric by this time, and they were particular lovers of the Telecaster guitar. I play Stratocaster. Now, before everybody has a cow, what is a Telecaster? And a lot of your Nashville pickers like the Telecaster, but I'm going to tell you right now, the best guitar in the world. And I'm going to hear groans all over the place now. It is the Stratocaster. Robert, why do you say Stratocaster and not the Telecaster? The Stratocaster is merely an upscale Telecaster. It was the new model Telecaster that was so much improved, and people loved it so much, they gave it its own name, and they called it the Stratocaster. Some of the great rockers in all music history have played the Stratocaster. Yours truly, Robert Lloyd, plays the Stratocaster. If I play a Stratocaster, that tells you something right there. It's the best guitar ever made. Now, there's some great guitars out there now, folks. And for acoustics, I play a Taylor. I've always wanted a Martin, never got around to getting a Martin. I'm left-handed, so I just can't buy the first Martin guitar that's a good price that I can find. I gotta find a left-handed guitar when I buy guitars, and so I bought a new guitar, a Taylor, and I love the Taylor. It's a different sound than the Martin. I love the Martin and I love the Taylor guitar, and so there you know what I think of guitars. Of course, you've got your Les Pauls and stuff like that a lot of great lead guitar players play, that has the sustain that's really nice. But country music is a what I call a chicken picker's paradise. And they love those Telecasters and Stratocasters because they make that snap. If you hear a real nice snap guitar on the rhythm, you can almost guarantee that is the the Stratocaster, and it could, of course, be a Telecaster too. As we're going into another form, we're going to go into the 1970s now, and we're going to talk about the pop influence in the country. Now, this is a sore subject with me and most country fans. But the record labels loved it temporarily. Remember, this it's just money to them. Anyway, some of these people were like Bobby Gentry, John Denver, Olivia Newton-John, Anne Murray, Marie Osmond, B.J. Thomas. Raindrops keep falling on my head. I love B.J., and he's a Christian man. The Bellamy Brothers, I wouldn't put them in that. Linda Ronstadt, she was, but she's technically, she's Hispanic, actually. I like some of Linda's stuff. But then they were really selling big. Remember the Urban Cowboy time? Remember John Travolta playing the oil derrick worker? And remember looking for love in all the wrong places? Garbage like that. I mean, I hate to say it. I apologize if you liked it. I mean, just look at me and say, I'm just an egotistical, arrogant guy. Just dismiss it. Don't worry about it. But anyway, I'm going to show you something about why this wasn't good. Initially, because of Urban Cowboy in this time frame, and they got rid of a lot of the drawls, but they lost their heart. Sales skyrocketed. But this is around 1978-79. But then by 1984, they had gone all the way back down again and below the starting point where this happened. And they knew they did something wrong. Which, thank God, thank the Lord for this one, outlaw country came along about this time also. And you had this current of real country music again. Now, I'm not a real big outlaw country fan. This would have been, Waylon Jennings would have been the leader of this with Willie and Waylon and the boys, Willie Nelson. Then you had Hank Williams Jr., which, my gosh, for being just the son of Hank Williams Sr., this guy has talent, folks. Hank Williams is a wild, wild man. I don't agree with him on a lot of things. I agree with him on a lot of things. And he's a wild man. And I interviewed his manager. I'm pulling a blank on his name. Forgive me, everybody. It's the guy that wrote, "Well, they say you don't go on Wolverton Mountain.
Her tender lips,
her tender lips
are sweeter than honey. And Wolverton Mountain protects her there. The bears and the birds."
Pulling a blank on his name. And Claude King made that a hit. But the guy that wrote that, also co-writer with June Carter Cash on Burning Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash. He wrote that. And he was his manager, and I interviewed him a few years back before he died. He was sick. He probably died within 3 or 4 months of me interviewing the guy. He was nice enough to accept a submission of a CD of some of my songs, and I sent that to him. I never heard back from him. I did hear he died. But he was a very interesting interview, and I'm going to have people like that on again because I think we learned so much.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring.
Then there's another guy that's considered outlaw country, and I'm going to dispute this. His name is David Allan Coe. David Allan is just a trailer trash individual, a despicable, poor excuse. for a white man, if I've ever seen one. You don't know where he stands on the race issue. He's a profane, cussing and swearing, sexually explicit, despicable. I mean, that's it. I have no respect. I love outrageousness and untamed. That's a slave there, though. He has no heart. He has no head. And he's nothing but a slave to the prison system, basically. That's dumb. And I, by the way, I don't necessarily say the person in prison is a bad guy either. There's some heroes that are in prison at times. And get ready, folks, because it's going to be more common for politically. We're going to have people in prison. Yours truly might be there someday, the way it looks at the times. In the mid-80s, then, they came back to real country again. You had traditional artists like George Strait and Ricky Skaggs, several Christians there, folks. And you had the success of Garth Brooks coming right after them. And people are sitting there always saying, oh, well, Garth, yeah, he's just trying to beat George Strait. You ask Garth. Garth humbly said, you know, I'm just a George Strait wannabe. And I'll tell you, I wasn't a real big fan of Garth for a long time, but you can't dislike a guy that says that. I mean, there's room for all of them in here. Garth Brooks had the most beautiful song of the 1990s, probably. He recorded The Dance, and Tony Arata wrote that out of Savannah, Georgia. There's a story to it. He lost it, and then he had to rewrite it again from memory and had to rewrite things that he couldn't remember, and gave it to Garth Brooks when he was a nobody, and he'd be playing this in bars, and people would be crying. It's because The Dance is so beautiful. If you ever have a chance to listen to Garth Brooks' The Dance, I want you to listen to it. In fact, I'll probably find it and have it at this show because people want it, should hear it.
For a moment, all the world was right. How could I have known that you'd ever say goodbye? And now,
then also at this time in the mid-1990s, now going into, we had Reba McEntire, Faith Hill, Martina McBride, Dina Carter, who's the daughter of a pretty good country artist herself, Leanne Rimes. There's an interesting person, Shania Twain. Interesting. Mary Chapin Carpenter. If she's country, okay. Then, of course, you had one of the most popular bands ever would have been the Dixie Chicks. I don't know what to think. I'll cover them one of these days because I love some of their music and stuff. But going in then the 2000s, we had on American Idol. Was it American Idol or was it the Country Stars show? Carrie Underwood. And, she was the fourth season American Idol. I'm sorry about that. She wasn't on the Country Stars one, although she could have been. I mean, she married a hockey player. That isn't, every time I hear a hockey player, I think of that Paul Newman movie about the minor league hockey team, Slapshot, whatever it was called. And I imagine her marrying to a guy like that. It just seems hilarious. By the way, it's a good movie. And she's a huge seller, and she had the song Jesus Take the Wheel. And I'll tell you, when I first heard that once or twice, man, that immediately just got my eyes watering, the story on that. And that hook right there was just unbelievable. My pick for the biggest artist of the future in country music is Mr. Scotty McCreery, the young man out of North Carolina who won American Idol this past year. How big he gets, I'm not sure. He's got to pick good songs. He's got to stop listening to every Tom, Dick, and Harry out there and start listening to me, actually. And he'd have some hits. He is the most humble, likable, all-American guy you will ever find. He comes from a great family. I mean, Conway Twitty says it all starts with a song. And if Scotty or one of his friends hears this, get this message to Scotty. Get some songs. You got to get songs, no matter how good a singer or likable you are. You got to have songs so you're going to be remembered. And people wonder why I got into country music. I was a rocker. Back when I was a professional musician, I played in a rock band. But when we'd have a little slow time once in a while, or maybe my good friend Wayne on lead guitar bust a string, he'd be changing a string. And then I'd tell the band, hey, let's play 6 days on the road. Let's do it in C or whatever. I could do it better than most country people could do. I could really do that song well. He'd come back and he'd be looking at me like, my gosh, you can sing country music. Here I'm this long-haired country or this long-haired rocker. But I knew country. I knew country because my stepfather, my mom and dad, my stepfather and my mom got married when I was quite young. This man was a good man to my mother, and he loved country music, and I hated country music. I grew up, you know, in pretty much the Beatles. I just loved their music, and hush-a-bye, you know, early 60s, late 50s music. I liked a little bit of it. I didn't like the bebop stuff, but I did like that. But anyway, I learned the country music because my stepdad would always have this playing on his radio or on the stereo. So even though I played rock music and stuff, I knew every country song back in those days. I could play For the Good Time and For the Good Times and everything like that. And here was this long-haired country singer, long-haired rock and roller singing country, and the people in bars would just be amazed that this long-haired guy, you know, curly hair would be, and I knew how to sing it. I mean, there was no, I wasn't a vocalist or anything. I mean, I was a musician. I mean, a songwriter. I wrote all types of songs, including country, and I could sing country. I knew country. It was in my soul. Nevertheless, it was something of a shock, but it actually added to our show because it was so odd. The new country music now is just Jewish-owned, record label-approved, politically correct productions. It no longer represents we as a country folk or white people or whatever you want to call it. Now I just hope someone like Scotty McCreery isn't poisoned and ruined, and he can see through all this. I hope he keeps his mouth shut though, and just you know, makes millions of dollars, and being a Christian, he'll spread that money around to the mission fields. I know he'll do that. He's a good man. His family's good. And I want the best for him, and I want the best for everybody. I know these people in the record labels that are accepted, they can't say anything. They lose their jobs. The only reason why I agreed to do this show is after 60 years of beating my head against the wall trying to get my music out, and they just won't do it, that's just too bad. I'm going to speak up. And, of course, I've been speaking up now for a long time, and I'm not ever going to stop. And they can kill me, but somebody else will pick up the torch, and they'll start running with it. But anyway, that's what I have and for the show today on country music. I hope you enjoyed it. I love you all. I hope you love the show, and hope to see you again next week. I don't know what we're going to have next week. It's going to be a good one because I only talk the truth, and I'll tell you the truth. God bless us, rocking the music world, and I'm Robert Lloyd. Every morning, looking in the morning with you.